You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web and your number one source for after-show entertainment. The AfterBuzz Studios in Los Angeles, California. Presented by Maria Menounos and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies. This is AfterBuzz TV's Fargo After Show. We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest news and gossip. And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite TV show. It's AfterBuzz TV's Fargo After Show.
Hello, Fargo fans, and welcome to episode 2 of our AfterBuzz TV After Show for Fargo. I'm your host, Oriana Leo, and joining me to my left is the fabulous...
Hi, I'm Jillian Love.
And on my right...
I am David Skifalitti.
And I'm Sarah Huggins.
And welcome to episode 2, entitled The Rooster Prince. If you're a member of the Fargo fan club, you have arrived to the best after show in town.
Ever.
I like that, Fargo fan club.
Please, start the show off with a question.
Yeah. Do we know anything about the title's significance?
I was just thinking the same thing.
Well, I bet Google knows, but I didn't check.
That's good. Okay.
Did anyone else check?
Yeah.
No. We can start talking while David...
Yeah, I'll start taking a look.
We can multitask.
Yeah, we can multitask.
Yeah, love that.
So the episode opens with who we find out is Mr. Wrench and Mr. Numbers.
And I have to say, I got very excited. I'm like a giant Adam Goldberg fan, like diehard.
Which one was which? Mr. Wrench was
Mr.
Goldberg?
Mr. Numbers is Adam Goldberg.
Okay. Mm-hmm. See, I'm convinced that the deaf... Mr. Wrench
is
not actually deaf.
No, it didn't seem like real sign language.
It did not seem like real sign language.
Right.
At all.
Well, obviously, one is the muscle and one is the brain.
Right.
I mean, as we saw in the film version, there was a muscle and a brain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who knows what's actually going to happen?
Yes.
Right. You know, the muscle ended up living in the end.
Right.
And the brain ended up dying. I mean, I don't want to see Adam Goldberg dead.
No.
But at the same time, I mean, look what happened to their characters in the show. They find a guy at the strip club, and the end of the episode, they end up shoving him in an ice hole.
Yeah. I kind of, jumping ahead just a little bit, but I appreciated the muscle in that scene. I thought they might use it, the ice hole, for information gathering purposes, but they just went straight for it. Like, nope, just dub this guy.
Innocent Orion.
Well, you have to think about it like this. Like, they took this guy in trying to figure out who murdered Hess, right? Mm-hmm. They're trying to find that guy. And it's the wrong guy. And now, if they set him free, they could get into trouble. So you might as well just dispose of the evidence.
The evidence. What's so funny is that they don't know if it's the wrong guy. They don't know what they're doing.
No, they don't
Nobody
know
knows what they're doing in this in these two towns of the first one I can't pronounce and the second one is Duluth.
What's the first one?
I honestly can't. Do you guys know how to pronounce the town's name?
Spell it out.
Don't.
It's a bunch of...
There is a blue ox on the sign.
Mm-hmm. It's a bunch of consonants.
Could help us out.
I found
with
information
that.
About the Rooster Prince.
Oh, okay. Please tell us.
Okay, so the Rooster Prince is a Jewish marshal or parable. And it comes from Hasidic Judaism.
Ding, ding.
Ding, ding, ding. Yes.
Some
and it's about being a prince who goes insane, and he takes off his clothes, and he sits under the table and pecks the floor.
Oh. Okay.
I don't know if it has anything to do with that, but I think just...
Well, we saw the Rooster Princess.
Yes, we did.
We did see some foreshadowing.
Yes, we did.
We'll see where that leads us. But the show definitely, you know, it opens up after we see... Mr. Wrench and Numbers with the funerals, which are pretty unremarkable as funerals go. We have the funeral of Lester's wife and
population Vern. 10, basically.
Yeah. Just family.
There was some mac and cheese.
Yes, I think that was at Vern's.
At Vern's funeral.
They had good food.
Yeah. With sports on the TV.
Yeah.
And Lester is staying with his brother, who we learned last time he doesn't really care for.
Right.
And, you know, he had the unfortunate incident with the machine gun.
Right.
Was it called the pig something? The piglet?
No.
He dropped it, essentially, completely humiliated
He dropped
himself.
An assault rifle and broke it.
And broke it. But while he's at his brother's house, he's invited to go hunting. And his sister-in-law says, oh, no, I don't think you'd want to be involved with that violence, which I thought, I don't know if you guys picked up on him oh, right, I shouldn't want to do that.
Yeah. Well, like, he seemed a little on edge throughout the entire episode. Right. And for me, it was, like, a little strange to see him sort of mourning his wife's death when he was the one who killed her.
Well, and that was, like, a sudden thing. I don't know. I feel like...
What was the sudden thing?
Well, that way he killed her. Like, that was the first person he'd ever killed. Right. It was the first person he'd ever killed. It's not like he's, like, a serial killer
That being said, he seemed to have enjoyed it.
Well, I think at first, the initial, you know, hit to the head, he felt that rush that I guess you would get if you murder somebody. I don't know. I've never murdered anyone.
Really?
Yet. but, you know, he's now processing it, and he's realizing what he did. And, like, I mean, like, look how long it took for him to clean up the stuff. He still hasn't cleaned up the basement. That is why he went to his brother's, because the basement and the room with her clothes is haunting him, and he can't shake it.
But also think about the problems he had before he impulsively killed his wife are the same problems he has now. He doesn't do anything.
Right. Well, he's not going anywhere.
He's not going anywhere. He doesn't take action on anything. No. And when he does, he fails miserably.
Mm-hmm.
And here he took action. He has to deal with the consequences, and he's failing miserably, right? He's on edge, but he's not mourning his wife the way I would expect someone to.
No, like he's publicly. Right.
Except that this is Minnesota, and I'm not sure that anyone is more... I'm not sure that culturally people are as expressive.
They seem to be a more positive part of the country and seem to look at the brighter side of things as opposed to going directly to the negative.
Speaking of which, this Easter weekend, I had some Easter guests that were from Minnesota.
Oh.
And so I said...
Chiano.
Yes, and I said I was going to quote them because they gave me some great insight and said that even when they hate something, they'll say, oh, that's different. I mean, they'll never...
I love that.
She was explaining to me that they don't really express outwardly negative feelings. They're very passive aggressive.
Mm.
So when they're trying to get at you, they're going to say, that's different or interesting. They're not going to come out and say anything
South, kind of condescending. God bless her heart.
Yes. Very passive aggressive, condescending. They're not going to start any conflict, which is what makes Lauren's character stand out so much.
Right.
Well, he's obviously not from there.
Who knows where he's from? Yeah, he's a drifter. Well,
Molly's a little bit forward.
Yeah.
We did notice something that Molly's last name.
Yes.
Solverson.
Solve her.
She seems to be, she has a hunch.
Aggressive.
Right? She is aggressive. She is the one that's trying to push this forward, and she just wants to talk to Lester.
Right. And she seems to be the only one who's actually putting the pieces together correctly. I mean, we saw in the first episode that she thinks that the Hess murder and the naked man, the naked frozen man, were connected.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm. And no one else in the police force seemed to think that they were even remotely connected. But she put those two pieces together very quickly.
And unfortunately for her, Vern was like the only person on her side.
Right.
For her to become chief. And now we know how much you love Bob Odenkirk.
Oh, I love Bob Odenkirk. Oh my God. No, actually, funny story. I met him. I live in Los Angeles, and I met him
In
Los Angeles.
At
a liquor store. He came in like all disheveled, and he got milk and a candy bar. nice. And I was just like, oh my God.
Hangover.
Saul Goodman from Breaking Bad. But anyway, yeah, he is just so not on Molly's side in this. And he wants things to be his way. And he didn't see it this way. So it will not be seen this way.
And he got some of it. I mean, he says that he thinks that there is something... It has something to do with who Lester was talking to in the hospital. Right, the whole drifter situation.
But
so he has part of it.
He does, yes, but he's also sort of like, I'm chief. Do as I say. Mm-hmm. I think it was a drifter. Leave Lester alone already.
Now, Julian, you heard something I didn't quite catch, which was Chief Oswald says that Lester faints at the sight of blood.
Yeah.
Do you remember from high school?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Remember, you know, you passed out here. And it's funny because when he was recalling the story to the police officers for the second time, he said, I saw my wife, aw, geez, I saw her, and, yeah, so I saw her, and that's all I remember, right. And, you know, then I don't remember anything. He leaves blood, he leaves the word blood out of the story, mm-hmm. And we know, too, that Chief Oswald, he's also squeamish under the sight of blood, so they're on the same page with that. I also think that that's where he gets a little hazy with the situation, because I don't think that Bob Odenkirk's character was fully aware of what was happening when he visited the crime scene, because he couldn't even stomach what was going on, you know, let alone that the chief died.
Absolutely.
But we saw him get sick once already, and, you know, now we know the whole thing about the blood. So, I mean, that stuck out to me right away.
Absolutely. And that leaves Molly to be the only one that really had her head about her.
Right.
Right. And
Lester also keeps saying that he has a concussion. He keeps hounding the fact that he's like, I have a concussion. Like, I can't remember everything. Everything's fuzzy.
But he does stand up for himself the first time in this episode, yes. When he calls Oswald and says, Molly was harassing me.
Right.
Because he knows that this is his sort of like last chance effort to get her off his back.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And obviously it's not going to work. Because then the show wouldn't work.
But when she's having, you know, at the diner, she's having a meal with her dad there, and Chief Oswald comes in and says, you're off the case, but you're on
the naked frozen guy,
which is ironic because it's this, you know, we know it's the same case. She knows it's the same case, mm-hmm. But, you know, she has to deal with all these bumbling idiots.
I love how they...
Do what you gotta do.
I love how when they said, they were like, you're off the case, and then she, or they're not, you're off the case, when she... They told her to stop harassing Lester, and then she, like, immediately was like, hey, like, followed him home.
Goes harasses him.
Yeah, and goes and harasses him.
I mean, I just think about how when you go to get your prescription filled and there's a sign that says, like, stand back for privacy. Right. She's right up in his grill.
She's a cop.
The ointment could have been for anything.
Right.
I mean, it could be super embarrassing.
Today I was at the pharmacy, and I heard the pharmacist. She was, like, very loud. And she was like, yeah, it's the vaginal cream for Molly.
Oh my God.
And I was like, if Molly was here,
she
would be cowering.
Mm-hmm. Or would she?
I don't know.
Yeah,
you know
that's
fine. What I did notice about Molly's dad, I don't know if any of you caught this, but he was shot.
Yes, I heard her say that.
Yeah, so this
she was like selling. He was selling something on the side of the road.
I don't know. What? He was shot, and the guy was let off. So she was trying to relate to the now deceased chief's wife, mm-hmm. and tell the story. So this isn't the first time that she sort of dealt with trauma. So I don't know if that's going to come back into play. I know that her father ended up living, but it was just sort of a tidbit that I'm not sure why they shared it.
They shared it for a reason.
They did. It's possible that her father was also a policeman.
Well, he was saying that this is a savage world, and that, you know, he wishes she would not be a police officer because his worldview is that this is a violent, savage world. And as a police officer, she's just going to keep digging and looking into that violence and savagery, and he wants something else for her.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe that's what happened. He was an officer. Right. He got shot, and then he decided to open up a restaurant.
Yeah.
And he needs
to live a simple life.
Hostesses.
Hostesses.
Oh, he needs a hostess. Because one day she's going to get married and have kids of her own.
And did you see her face when he said that? She was like, I don't know.
I'm 31 now.
No prospects.
I'm 31.
Oh, yeah. We had an age talk.
So we then are introduced in a very interesting way to the story of Milos Stavros, the American Phoenix.
The American Phoenix.
Oliver Platt.
The supermarket king of Minnesota.
Yeah. Through this interesting way of Lorne going to the... It wasn't a post office. What was it? It was like a post...
Like a mailbox.
It was a mailbox window.
Yeah. Right.
Maybe like a mailbox, et cetera.
In which he asked for a package addressed to Duluth.
This is one of my favorite scenes, by the way, BTW.
Why? Tell us about it.
Because I don't know. I just liked it. I don't know.
It's because of the comments that I made, isn't it?
Oh, my God. Yes, it is. That's why.
What did he say?
That is why.
Because I
wrote it down.
If he was wearing a turtleneck, if that was his skin.
As soon as he walked in, David was like, is that a turtleneck or is that his skin? And he was like, completely.
And it was his skin.
And it was his skin.
We're talking about BBT.
Yeah. Lorne.
BBT Lorne.
Lorne. I'm getting the names down. We need to practice saying them. But I liked it. I thought it was, I just liked it was like a little cat and mouse thing, and then he eventually got his way, which I like. I like that he likes to play. Lauren likes to play with people, and I think that's an interesting.
I have an interesting article to read a little later about
he
that.
He intimidates.
He does, and I also read something about the haircut. About that, it was like he said a friend, kind of like one of a friend, gave him a haircut, and he said the bangs were just supposed to be so innocent and on him so wrong, right. And it just made it perfect to have the bangs.
Yeah. Well, actually, the guy that they ended up throwing in the ice hole at the end, it keeps sounding like I'm saying a curse, but I'm saying ice hole. Ice hole.
God, Jillian, don't curse.
Sorry, heaven forbid. Guys. This is a PG show. He had the weird, like, Caesar bangs, too. Yeah. And that was really the only similarity about the two men.
Well, and they had a cut.
Oh, and he had a cut. Yes, yeah. The cut. Mm.
They both had Ivanka to head on the head and some bangs.
And they were both at the strip club. You did?
Yep.
What were you doing during that whole part?
So Lauren gets his new identity from whoever this employer is, the guy with all the phones that we saw last episode. And it has the book, and he's a preacher, a minister.
He's a minister now.
He's a minister now.
Perfect.
It's the perfect cover.
Isn't it?
It really is, because no one ever is going to question a minister.
Well, sometimes.
So he goes to the office of Mr. Stavros, Milos Stavros. Mm-hmm. And there is a ransom note, if you will.
Yeah.
And he's trying to
an old school ransom note. Like
a very immature high school. Like, that's what you would do in high school.
I made one of those in high school. Yes.
What did it ransom say? Note?
It was like.
What was the ransom
note? Do tell.
My friend and I wrote one of those ransom notes and sent it to our friend who was spending the summer on Staten Island.
And
sent like fake murder pictures.
Oh my goodness.
With like spaghetti and ketchup.
That's actually
amazing.
Quite creative. I really hope they saved them.
Yeah, what the hell are you doing during summer?
Creep alert.
So we find out that this guy's the king of grocery stores. He's very proud of himself.
El Rey de Mercados.
Mangoes and contributing to global warming or whatever.
Having mangoes in the summertime, in the wintertime, is pretty awesome.
Yeah, I mean, he's the supermarket king for a reason.
Yeah.
He ships his stuff in from Ecuador.
Mm-hmm.
And he's pretty much a G. Oh, we know he's worth over $10 million.
Sure. Over 15.
Maybe 20.
Maybe 30.
Who knows? Baller.
So
it's Minnesota.
My question to you guys, I know those are Minnesota dollars too, which by the way,
those
are
a long way.
Big money.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Big money. What I didn't quite understand is that so after he makes some extremely disparaging comments about his wife, his Greek wife, and what happens to her in other regions after the age of 40.
It grows teeth.
Yeah. That he wants to divorce her, but has she done anything to him that we know other than...
Being over 40?
Being over 40.
No.
Is that her only crime?
Probably.
I'm pretty sure that's her only crime.
Yeah. But she has an attitude problem.
Yeah.
But, I mean, really,
if you're married to
a jerk, then...
Right.
Yeah.
And then he receives this ransom note anonymously, and he thinks it's from her. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to get our story. Like,
sure. And then there's also the dim-witted son who's telling the weird jokes.
Which it was weird. Right. He was like, at first I didn't realize that was the son. I was like, is that a boyfriend? Her, like, boy toy? Like, what?
He came into the office.
Into the office.
And was dad.
But, oh, not him. I'm talking about the other guy.
The trainer?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh.
This is another thing that came up, and I don't know if this makes any sense dealing with the kids on the show, but we see the dim-witted son. We don't know if he actually has a mental issue or whatnot.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Then we meet
Gordo. With the autism.
Yeah, the autism on the spectrum. Who else do we have that we can...
Hanks' son, or daughter.
Oh, Hess sons who obviously, you know, one of them, actually both of them have issues. And the only one that we sort of have some faith in is...
Greta Grimley.
Is Greta, and as we know by looking on IMDb, she is the only one in all 12 episodes.
Right.
And the reason why we didn't meet her last episode is because she was on the phone talking to him. So she was listed in the episode. So maybe this is, sort of predicting, foreshadowing, that she'll be the light.
Well, between Molly Salverson and Greta Grimley, there are only, saving graces from this whole town.
Well, Greta also has the police radio, which is how she was communicating with her father. So maybe she somehow gets in touch with Molly.
I feel like Molly, though, she's getting a little bit too close for comfort. Like, as soon as, Lauren comes back into that picture there, she's going to bite the dust pretty quick.
I think that's a pretty good prediction. Sorry, for early prediction. No, that's okay. So you're right. We go and we meet Mrs. Stavros and her trainer, which it's hard to figure out.
I didn't know if that was her boyfriend. I don't. It was
he's
weird.
Not particularly buff.
Right. No.
He's just very bronzed.
Is he gay? Is he straight? Right.
I
don't know.
He was flamboyant a little bit.
He seems to enjoy his role as as her
sculptor.
You know, side piece or
sculptor.
Whatever.
Yeah. Sculptor.
Who knows? Do we think they're having an affair?
I think something.
I got a weird vibe.
I don't think there's anything going on with them because he also asked for a weird specific amount of money. If you remember,
it was wasn't like 40 something.
I want $1 million. He was like, I want $43,576.
I don't recall this part.
Me neither.
He commented in the note. Lauren commented on it. He was like, why did he ask for this amount of money?
And is there anybody
Stavros
that
was like, what difference does it make?
Yeah.
I didn't hire you to look up why the note was sent. I hired you to find out who sent it.
Okay. So we're assuming that he wrote the note.
Well, yeah, the tanning lotion on the back of the note. Yeah.
Right.
You know, I mean.
There's so many little details, I feel like, that
he at least handled
not
it. He at least handled
the note.
Right.
Yes.
That was my assumption. I didn't assume he made it. I assumed he at least handled it.
Yeah.
Very stupidly.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say that the dim-witted son and the trainer are in cahoots.
Oh.
Because I already think that's the son who sent the note.
Oh, yeah. You did say that.
Yeah.
Because of the timing? Because of him coming in while they're reading it? Him wanting to be a part of it?
It's the minute they introduced a son into, like, an heir situation.
Yeah.
Why would you even introduce a son?
I don't know, but I love the angle.
Yeah. So he's, like, not the brightest, but he's smart.
That's why he's asking
to.
Or he's smarter than he seems.
And he just has a toy that he wants, and it's probably $47,000.
Yeah.
Well, I love that idea. I think that's I really love it.
Yeah.
So Lauren shows up. Mr. Malvo shows up to their home. We meet Mrs. Stavros, the trainer, and he's posing as...
He works for the divorce attorney.
The divorce attorney to talk about the funds, right?
He clearly has, like, another angle on all of this.
I know. I was kind of thinking, who is he going to mess with this time?
Right.
Right? Which he seemed like he left the area without actually stirring any... You knew what.
Although it could have been trouble because the son recognized him.
Mm-hmm.
And he was there for part of the conversation, but, you know, luckily he shot him down with another joke, which was very clever, again.
Trombone.
I don't get that joke.
A trombone.
It's the kind of bone that a dog can't chew.
They can't chew a trombone. It's an instrument.
I mean, I get it.
Oh, my God. Did you like karate better?
Yes.
Yeah, karate was better.
Yeah, that was cute.
So what is interesting, here's another idea. What if the son isn't really that dumb?
That's true.
But he's going to put it all together.
Mm.
You know what I mean? He knows what he's there for. He can turn it all around. We will see.
We will see.
So what's the deal with the security guy that was in the office?
Yeah. Okay, so he wants to be in charge of looking for the person who sent the ransom note, and he's threatened by Lauren's presence.
There's a whole lot of egos in this small town.
They're
so concerned with their self-importance.
Well, I also think that he's worried. I mean, I would be worried about my job because this, you know, Stavros doesn't seem like he messes around. This guy has been his confidant forever, but if he can't do what is asked of him, obviously there already was something that happened where they had to hire Lauren.
Right.
You know, like this guy might have looked... Whatever, he didn't accomplish it, so that's why they hired. So
he seems like so confident. He's like, I'm gonna find out who did this.
But he's not. He's gonna die.
Yeah. So what I love is that before he shows up, is that Lauren is listening to Lester's phone message on a Walkman.
Yeah.
Over and over again, like as if it's his soothing self-help tape or something.
Right.
Like that's what.
That's motivating him.
Yeah. Truly. We talk about motivating characters.
It was because, you know, he obviously pinned the murder on Lester, even though he was the one that committed all of them. He said, you know, you did this. You did this to Hess. I didn't do this. So I think just by listening to it in his brain, as long as he hears, you know, the struggle, whatever, he knows that really it was Lester that killed Vern. And he didn't do it. But, you know, like any person, they need to sort of justify that to themselves.
I was getting the feeling that, like, he was enjoying...
Yeah, me too.
Getting off on the fact.
Yes, yeah. Like, the weakness and the despair in his voice, that was like, making him feel good.
Yeah, he lost seemed on all of that.
Ecstatic.
Lost in his eyes?
Or... Yeah.
Ew. No, for the record, I not into
your
him anymore.
Crush
like,
now
this is no, this is, like, so... This is so weird. Unless he comes into the studio, then we love you.
So the security guard comes in and tries to have a confrontation with Lauren Malvo. And what does he do to respond?
Takes a poo.
Takes a dump. I was waiting for him to, like, start ripping the pages out of the book.
And wiping with it.
With that would have been amazing. That would have been amazing.
But he didn't. He just, like, sat there and read it.
It was pretty – I was pretty impressed. I was not expecting that. And I think that we should all – just stash that in the back next time someone comes in and wants to have a fight with you.
Just you're start just taking
open
it.
The door and sit down on the toilet and they will probably leave.
Yeah, they'll get the you don't even have
you don't
to
have
do
to poop.
You
don't
have to say anything. He didn't
say a word. No. Leave the door open.
So I shouldn't tell your fiance that's what you're gonna do the next time you get into a disagreement.
Okay.
I won't tell.
No, it's a secret.
What if you're not anywhere near the bathroom? You have to be like, excuse me.
You have to be like, hey, can you follow me? Can you come back here?
Let's start the conversation this way.
Excuse me.
And just have
you know, it would probably have an equally, it'd have a great effect. They would just be out of there.
So taking your clothes off?
Yeah. Well.
Well, they might be too into that.
No, I suggest the toilet. Fans, let us know.
Let us know what you want us to do.
Hashtag Augies. Yeah. Sitting on a toilet. I don't know.
Or what you do in an argument.
Yeah.
Hashtag poop fight.
Poop fight.
So we see Lester going back to the house and he visits the washing machine. I thought he was going to
fix it.
So did I.
No.
I was like, he's going to fix it.
He's going to have some kind of healing moment. Instead, that's where he has hidden the murder weapon.
Which was genius of him to hide it in the washing machine. Because who's going to look inside the washing machine for a murder weapon?
Full of hair and brains.
Yeah,
did you check
think
that out?
He would have bleached it or something. He was like, it was covered in DNA.
This is his first murder.
He doesn't have the cleanup down yet. He's not
Dexter.
Well, he hasn't even cleaned the basement. He hasn't done anything.
He decides that he's just going to sell the house. He's probably not even going to clean it before he tries to sell it.
Weird that nobody else is like, hey, you know what? You should clean that up. Well, if we're really getting down to it, though, because I'm like a big crime. I watch like a lot of those shows.
Mm-hmm.
They send someone out. Like if something like that happens, yes. They send someone out to clean it.
Clearly
not in Minnesota.
Well, it's a small town.
Everyone knows each other. They clearly do not
have... Nobody wants to clean that up.
...protocol, like, the big city. And you even hear the security guard guy going, you big city folk coming in here and trying to tell us what to do. Like, there's a big pushback and resentment towards doing things the way...
People do them in Minnesota.
They should be done.
So we see Lester at his brother's house.
Hanging with some TV dinners.
Why?
What the hell were they eating?
Why smell the urine?
Why smell the urine?
He's
you said
so creepy.
And I quote, "He's curious."
I said he couldn't help himself.
Whatever, yes. he couldn't help himself. And then which to I said, "Would you smell it?" He knows what it is.
But that's something about his character, is that he couldn't help himself.
But to open it and sniff it
is disgusting.
It's disgusting. There's something wrong with Lester.
Yeah.
You're just figuring that out.
We're two episodes in. Although, if you really think about it, we're three episodes in because it's the longest TV show ever made.
Although, this week wasn't that long.
No.
It was 75 minutes.
Yeah. Well, I thought the pacing was great.
Mm-hmm.
We had talked about that while the show was happening because I feel like, you know, we were expecting this explosive moment, like what happened in the first episode.
We did not get one.
We didn't get it, but it moved a lot faster.
I enjoyed this one
Although
way
we did get a little neighborly naked action.
Yeah.
Which is always fun.
So Naughty we get neighbor. To spend time with Gus Grimley and his daughter Greta Grimley, because I was really excited about doing a Gigi, but we have two Gigis.
Yeah,
it's going to make
that.
It a little difficult. So
Gus and Greta.
So we have Gus and Greta, and we get to meet Greta. She seems like a very smart young lady. And we get to see the two of them having a lovely dinner of burger and fries together with ketchup. Mm-hmm. And there is a modestly dressed Hasidic Jewish woman.
didn't say she was ascetic. I'd say she's
conservative,
probably more orthodox.
Orthodox, yeah. Yeah. Well, we were saying I assumed because of the rooster prince,
right?
Right. That was my right. assumption.
That was your shout.
But when you see the family having the Seder,
yes,
they didn't really look ascetic.
So,
and also, like, I don't think a Hasidic Jew would call someone to the truck from outside.
Oh, is that their truck? Oh, I didn't put that together. The mitzvah tank.
The mitzvah tank. Yeah, I don't see a Hasidic Jew calling the mitzvah tank to come on over.
I don't either.
So maybe they're a little more loose.
So they're a little, maybe just.
I don't know. It is Minnesota.
Who knows?
Yeah.
But, you know, Gus, I'm assuming, is a single dad. Mm-hmm. It appears that there's no mother in the picture, right. whether right. she's passed away or left. I don't think
Hopefully we'll find out.
We don't know that yet. But there's this beautiful woman. They don't have curtains up at all. Yeah. Right. Do you guys find that a little strange?
They look no. very close
or they're
together.
Just, they're open.
He's but a single man.
They're completely open for dinner, for everything. And right. their houses
oh,
are
the
very close.
The street.
They're right. very together. Close together. And all Gus has to do while he's eating his burger and fries is look over and see her undressing. Like, that seems
awesome.
Weird.
You've never been, your apartment building has never been so close to someone else's apartment building.
Oh my God,
I've
been
had,
there.
Yeah,
I lived
it
in
is.
Boston.
No, it is right stroke. Now.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
I can
saying.
See
like,
people in their shower, so I keep my thing closed. And
right.
I.
But occasionally, I mean,
but occasionally
I'm sure
you
that,
peek and you're yeah. like, is there anyone there?
Yes, okay, occasionally I peek, but I don't like open it up and then take Naked. Off my clothes and like give a show to whoever's standing
shaking,
there.
You're like, shaking. Yeah, you're like
well,
that.
No, this is the thing about, you know, the Jewish culture, at least, you know, the
Tell
the
us,
type, Jillian, the type,
our resident Jew.
Well, you know, also David and
Jewish
a little bit
also.
And a little bit Sarah. Come on.
But I'm nominating you.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm a little bit Jewish. I like
so
that.
Basically the female form has to be covered. Mm-hmm. We saw her take off a wig. They're not allowed to show their real hair.
To anyone other than their husband.
Exactly.
She did take off a wig?
Yeah. She did take off a wig.
And she is Orthodox. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I mean I have never I have you know, I've seen Orthodox Jews before. I've never seen them in that sexy of lingerie.
They can be sexy too. Come on now.
They can, absolutely. But it's usually, you know, very, very modest dressing. Ankles cannot be shown. You know, right. everything needs to be covered. And, I mean, she really just probably not getting it from her husband.
Loud
so
and
she
proud.
Wants a little bit of attention. Because, I mean, hey, if you had that body, I'd want to flash a guy yeah. in a window too.
I do it
know.
All the time.
I'm
just kidding.
I totally
professional.
Agree with you.
I'm just kidding.
And I'm not speaking for, you know, all of the Orthodox or
Jewish population.
Or Jewish community at all.
Hasidic Jewish culture.
No.
I'm just saying from my experience, you know, they are very modest dressers and the body is something that should be covered and not shown. So it's a little bit, you know.
Well, yes. I mean, yeah. in that community, it is only for your husband.
Exactly.
Guys.
Mm-hmm.
You don't even necessarily communicate with other men.
Mm-hmm. So this is, I mean, she's really...
She's putting it out there.
She's really putting it out there. She's serving her husband and, like, looks up at him and gives him a nice...
And she is serving her neighbor.
Yeah.
Or wants to be. Yeah, she's definitely loving on her number.
Yeah.
And I don't quite know what to make of that, but I'm hoping that we see more of them.
I know, I mean, it was a little strange.
It seemed a little
random. That little scene was just sort of like... put in there, but we don't know what it is about yet.
I have my thoughts.
Mm. Oh, good.
Do tell.
Prediction.
I don't know. I feel like when you give in to temptation like that, I mean, he knows that she is a married woman, and I feel like, you know how they always say the virgin lives in horror movies? I always feel like if you see a character doing something bad, they're usually going to go that way. So maybe it was foreshadowing his ultimate death, you know, it's involving her or she,
right.
he goes over to see her. Maybe Lorne will grab her or he sees it through the window. I don't know. I don't know my crazy mind.
Well, actually, I think you might be on something. I did write down something that Gus says to his daughter Greta when he says, sometimes there's more than one right thing. Mm-hmm. And she doesn't understand what that means. And he's trying to explain that there's not always one right way to do things. There's
right.
But... I don't know. It looks like it could be foreshadowing, you know,
okay.
of what the right thing is for them. I think we've pretty much wrapped up. Are you guys have anything else to say before news and gossip?
No. I think we should get into news and gossip.
All right. News and gossip.
Yeah. TV
news. Fracas. That's the only thing.
Oh,
who would
goodness.
Like to go first?
Fracas.
Hi, Sarah.
Okay. So I looked, or we were all curious, and... If the movie Fargo, the TV show Fargo, is based on something that really happened, because they do have that thing at the beginning that says what does it say?
Something. Out of respect to the living.
It says it's based on a true story, and out of respect to the dead, the...
It'll be told exactly, names yes.
change it. The names have been changed, right. But the story will be told exactly the way yes. that it happened.
And I'm sure something the Die like Hard fans already know this, but...
But we didn't.
We did not. No. And even though we are Die Hard fans now. so, apparently, the movie is based on a series of events, and they just kind of connected them all together.
Okay.
It's events that took place in Minnesota in 1987, and... Let's see. There was a newspaper story about a woman named Helle Crafts who disappeared in November in 1986. And then Crafts' husband told people she was visiting her mother in Denmark, but a friend telephoned the mother and discovered Helle was not there. A babysitter saw a rug with a dark stain in the Crafts' room, and it later went missing. A private detective uh-huh. found the rug at the landfill and took it to the police, and that, along with the other evidence, indicated foul play. But where was the body? Yeah. Yep. No, in 1989, police discovered the truth. Her husband had fed her body through a wood chipper, and that's basically, like, the main part of the story. And then it doesn't say what the other events are. It just is a series of events.
So our TV show is based on a movie that is based on true events.
True events. Yes. Loosely.
Loosely. Well, I mean, it is based.
Yeah, it is based.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which, I mean, I thought that was interesting. I like the story behind the story.
So
yeah.
I have an article, Billy Bob Thornton Talks Fargo. I read an article he did with Fox News, as well as he did a series of interviews with Southern states-based outlets.
Okay.
He did talk about how he feels that the media doesn't portray the South in a fair manner. They're always like country bumpkins and right. so on and so forth.
Well, is he Southern?
Yes.
Okay.
He's from Arkansas. So he was just talking about his character. I thought this was really good insight for us because we've been trying to understand this character. Right. And he says, I liked the idea of playing a guy who has no conscience. He has this weird sense of humor. He likes to mess with people. And as we went along, I started thinking, he's a loner. So messing with people is actually his social life, his recreation. He doesn't like weakness. He has this weird curiosity about weak people, and he sees them as people he can use. So it goes on, and there's a couple articles that he, you know, pressed that he did, and he speaks on various degrees. But I thought it was really interesting.
Where did you find this article?
This was on Knoxville.com.
Okay.
And then the previous one I found, I literally just did a Google search for Billy Bob Thornton, and he did a bunch of press in the last 3 days, and it was all out of Southern outlets.
How interesting.
That is interesting.
So I think as we go forward, thinking about him, his social life and recreation is to mess with people and pick on their weaknesses.
That makes
a
lot of sense.
Yeah.
I like it.
Do you have anything?
No?
Okay.
I'm ready to predict.
Yeah, moving on.
And now, you're after Buzz TV.
Music sounds here today.
That was good.
Do you want to go first, Jillian?
Sure. Okay. So I am, you know, I'm going with my prediction, obviously, of Gus's ultimate end having something to do with the Jewish woman in the window.
Okay.
But I do think that time is almost up for our Molly. I think that she will probably die in the next episode
or
the one after.
I concur.
She is just, I understand that she wants to find this out. But she's also pissing me off about how aggressive she is. Like, girl, don't be so thirsty.
Yeah.
Don't be so thirsty about the crime.
When she's so obvious.
Yeah.
I feel like she's the only one searching for the truth, though.
I get that, but it's, I don't know, like, for me, it's almost not about it now. We've moved so much past it that obviously the show is going to have to deal with the murders that took place in the first episode.
Right.
But we're weaving a tangled web now. Like, there are going to be other murders that are unrelated. Lorne is going to be sort of the only constant thread throughout all the murders.
Who is a drifter.
Yeah. I mean, he's hired to do this. So, I believe that Molly is going to die, and I hope that we find out more about Colin Hanks's character, because he hasn't really been heavily featured yet. So I'm excited to see what happens next week.
Awesome. Mm.
David?
Okay,
so what I'm predicting is that Colin Hanks is going to put the pieces together before Molly does with Lester. Because we saw when we saw Colin today in the police station, he pulled the ticket out and he had all the information of his car, of Lauren's car. So he's going to be the next one to die, I think. And then Molly.
Really?
That's all I have, I think.
Sarah?
Agree. I think Molly is biting the dust next week for sure. If for some reason not next week, then the week after. I think Colin Hanks is going to last a lot longer.
Gus Grimley.
Gigi. I think he's going to last a lot longer. I did write down that it looks like Lester gets some action next week. I'm not sure if you guys saw that in the preview, but I thought that was kind of interesting. I don't know.
Like sex times?
Yeah, sexy.
Some woman was straddling him. Not sure.
Yeah, she opened up her robe to him. I don't know if actually that was... It sort of looked like the house looked like the supermarket Stavros's. You know, the house that... So I don't know if it was his wife. I'm just speculating now. It sort of looked like the very open windows. It looked like that house.
Yeah.
I thought it kind of looked like Kate Walsh.
Yeah, but we know that she was
in one episode, so...
Mm-hmm. Spoiler alert, she might surprise you.
Oh, maybe.
Or it could be another hot chick.
It could be his sister-in-law.
True story. Ooh, she's pretty. I think that's all I have. I mean, I definitely think... Yeah, I mean, I don't really have anything else. I'm obsessed. I hope Adam Goldberg stays the whole time. I'm totally.
It would be great. It would be great to continue to see his face.
Yeah,
I have to concur with all of you guys. I mean, I think Gus Grimley, we're going to see a lot more of him and his daughter, and that story is going to develop. I'd love to learn more about the mitzvah tank next door. It sounds like the coolest thing ever. I really want to know what it is.
What happens in there?
Yeah, well, I mean,
call them. They could come. They could set up a seder.
That
for
would be
us.
Great. I don't know who I think. If I really think if anyone's going to die next week, it's going to be that annoying trainer. Just because I feel like Lauren would love to off someone that weak and measly. Right. But fans, I would love for you all to tweet at Noah Hawley, the writer of this show, because I tweeted him today. It's NoahHawley at Noah Hawley on Twitter to ask him to come in and be on our show. We would love to interview you,
yes,
Noah.
We would.
Yes.
And I've already tweeted him to ask if you guys would ask and say pretty please, maybe he'll come.
Yay.
So that news, and I think that's it for the rest of our show.
Yes.
Thank you so much for tuning in and hashtag us. We have to find out where we are, right?
Yeah.
Sarah, where can the people find you?
I'm not used to starting. I'm at Sarah on the Go, Sarah with an H on Twitter, and SarahBear627 on Instagram.
I am on Twitter and Instagram at You Can Call Me Skiff, SKIFF.
I am at Jillian Leff on Twitter, at Jilly Leff on Instagram. My website's JillianLeff.com, and make sure you tweet us all week because we like responding.
We love it. And I'm Oriana Leo. You can find me on Twitter at Miss Oriana Leo, Instagram, Oriana Leo, website. OrianaLeo.com. Remember it. But please tweet us. We love it. Comment on YouTube. Rate us on iTunes. We love 5 stars. And tweet at Noah Hawley. See if we can get him in studio.
Are we hashtagging Audgies or Fargo Fan Club?
Ooh. Fans, tell us what you want. Fargo Fan Club sounds pretty good.
Fargo Freaks.
It was you.
I know. Yeah. But I didn't think of it.
Yeah.
Like that.
We'll brainstorm.
Brainstorm.
Send some tweets out.
Yeah. What do you guys want to be called?
Fargo
Fan
called?
Club?
Yeah.
I mean, I like that, but something kind of... cheesy, but maybe
whatever.
That's Jeezy. Oh, jeez. That's it for tonight's show. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later!
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.